Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parents in Hell with...
Can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
Can you say Josh Widdicombe?
No.
Can you say Michael Marden? Very good.
That was solid, that.
That was good.
Not sure about Michael's name being in
no.
there. It's a bit odd. Yeah.
Currying favour. Good morning. This is our 2-year-old daughter, Freya. I'm presuming it's Freya. F-R-E-J-A?
Freja?
It's got to be Freya, hasn't it?
Who knows? Sounds Scandinavian.
Freja, yeah. Rather brilliantly, since learning your name, she now calls the swallows nesting in our street, Rob Beckett.
Swallows nesting. Enid Blyton ringing in.
Yeah, this is nice, isn't it?
He sounded like he was like a broadcaster, the guy.
Yeah, she often calls out to see Rob Beckett. We live in West Cornwall, in the village of Mousel. Mousel is lovely. Don't try and drive there. The streets are too tight in my Humble.
It sounds like an old car you've got.
Don't drive my old Humble around there.
The Humble, can't get it. Scratch the pieces.
The old Ford Humble. We've been listening to your podcast since Freja came along.
It's Freja, it's Swedish.
It
means lady or noble woman.
And she's now a big sister to a 3-month-old. Aoife. Can you spell Aoife, Rob?
Aoife. A-O-E-F-E.
Oh, so close. A-O-I-F-E.
Fuck! It's a nightmare Irish names, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Irish. So maybe Freya's... Sending love from the West Country. Thank you for the brilliant laughs, Louis and Alisa.
Do you know the...
P.S. All our names are a nightmare. They are. Oh, they put the pronunciations here.
Yeah.
Freja, which is pronounced Freya.
Yeah.
A-O-E-F-E, which is pronounced Aoife.
Yeah.
Lewis, which is pronounced Louis. Alisa, which is pronounced Alisa.
When I go to Ireland, I do a bit of material, but I think it's okay. It's like when the Irish names, it's like they pick a name, like Aoife or Siobhan, and they go, right, how are we spelling it?
Siobhan.
Scrabble bag. Boom. That's how we're spelling it.
Do you want me to tell you about going to South East London?
Yes.
Went to South East London.
Yeah, it's okay.
To a birth in Crystal Palace Park.
I'd say it's more South London Palace.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. No, but it's South East. It's more South East and South West, but yeah. Okay.
Is this not your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's sort of, yeah.
You know, Mark Steele was there. Joe Brand. These are South East London people.
Why did you go and see them?
It was Izzy Sooty's birthday.
Right, okay, yep. Yeah, I know Izzy Sooty.
In the park.
Yeah.
It's a long old drive with two kids. Saved my son's nap for the drive.
Yep.
He did 20 minutes.
Yeah, because you have to come through the tunnel and then round.
Through the tunnel, mate. Through the bloody tunnel.
Yep.
Get there. He runs off. It's in a park.
Yeah.
Don't get to talk to an adult for the whole thing.
No, because you can't go, oh, no, actually, the adults are going to this bit of the park.
Yeah.
You're just on the swings.
Yeah, exactly. So he just runs off.
So was it an adult? Was it a kids thing as well? Like everyone?
Adults
daytime?
Party with kids there.
In the daytime?
Yeah.
Picnic. I don't like picnics.
No? What's your problem?
A lot of it.
There was no food. No, it was like afternoons. So there was no like sitting down having a sandwich.
So what are you doing? Just all stood up? Talking?
Well, I went to the cafe. Got tea.
Yeah.
Oh, what was I doing?
What was the hub of the party?
I was a load of adults stood around having Prosecco and cake.
Right. Blankets?
No, I don't think so. Maybe blankets. Maybe blankets.
Yeah.
People were sat down.
Okay. It's nice for Crystal Palace Park, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I explored the whole thing with my son.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you just kind of... Basically, what would happen is me or Rose would follow him.
Yeah.
And then after about 10 minutes, the one who'd followed him would loudly go, "No, oh, don't make me go over there as well." And then the other one would feel like, "Oh, right, that's the signal that I need to take over."
So a kind of passive aggressive way of saying
to your partner, "I'm done with this. I want to talk to an adult."
As an outsider, do you think that's the best way to communicate?
No. No.
Looking back, how do you think you'd play it next time? Exactly the same.
The same, yeah. Exactly the same, yeah.
And then just sort of build, and then one will end up doing more and just build up a slight resentment.
Yeah.
And what's your daughter doing at this stage? Just sort of.
Oh, she's playing with the other kids of her age.
And they're just hanging around that little area. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're having a great time.
Two's is a tough. That is hard.
And, yeah. And then.
And he's too young for an iPad.
And then we got back in the car. Well, you say that. Got back in the car.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're too young to actively be able to have it properly. Yeah, yeah. It's like.
So we get back in the car. They've both got their iPads the way home.
Oh, we can't. We don't do that. They get car sick.
No, they're fine in the car with it. One iPad dead. One on 1%. One charging lead. And
what are you doing there?
My phone on 3% and needs it for...
Why is everything so low charge?
Because my phone... I've got into this thing of... In fact, I need to charge my phone at this exact moment. I was meant to, I'm not charging my phone over the night at the moment.
Why not?
Because I'm forgetting to. Because I'm putting, well, basically.
I'd say charging your phone at night is the most important thing anyone has to do in a
day. In life, I know. I basically.
You can't do anything about it.
I've got a brown noise machine.
Yeah.
That's taken the plug off my phone next to the bed.
Right.
So.
So you need a extension lead?
One of those splitters, and I just haven't got round to it.
Right. Well, we've got a 20-minute break.
Yeah, well, I need to go to Maplin's. Does that still exist?
Probably not.
No.
Wilco's gone. You're better off
just
wandering the streets and looking on the floor. I think you've got more chance of finding an extension lead than a shop in Soho that does extension lead.
I could find a copy of Wallpaper magazine.
I reckon you could knit one out of here.
Yeah, maybe.
They wouldn't know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It was a perilous journey home.
Yeah.
We ended up using Rose's phone to navigate.
Yep.
Write my phone off. It's going to just die. Yeah. It's just gone. And then charge
my... You haven't got a charger in the car?
Yeah, we've got one lead.
One, right. You can get doubles on that. You can get a thing...
I know, but it's too late by that.
But you can get a thing that goes into the cigarette holder with like two USB things off it.
Oh, we've got more of the USBs. We just didn't have the leads.
Oh, right. So you've got the holes, none of the
leads. Got the holes, not the leads. Charge one iPad and then they had to try and watch it together, which was fucking
bedlam. Oh, and also the age gap. They're not watching the same
thing. Fucking bedlam.
So what did you choose?
My daughter didn't want to watch... Gabby's Doll's House, even though that was the thing
that's what she likes.
I know, but by that point she was making a point. She wanted to
watch Gabby's Doll's House.
She wanted to watch Is It Cake?
Oh, that's too grown up for a 2-year-old.
Exactly, he doesn't know what cake is.
Is it cake or is it not?
Yeah. He wanted to watch Sarah and Duck. She wanted to watch Is It Cake. We met at Gabby's Doll's House. She was furious about that because she wanted to watch Is It Cake. Then there's the discussion of whose seat is it going to be attached to?
And you're driving, so Rose is in awful brake-backing turn.
Yeah.
That round like that. The non-driver, that is a brutal... Whenever I'm driving and I see Lou having to twist round and sort them out, I'm like, I've got the best job here.
Driver's great.
Driver's great.
As much as you can.
Can you just be quiet a bit? I'm concentrating.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm driving. Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I'm driving, everyone.
Fucking hell, it's a piece
of... Do you know
what
I quite like as well? Is when we get something from the shop... It's a sandwich or a bottle of drink. I say to you, can you open that for me, please? Do you mind opening that for me, please? I'm actually driving. Thank you. Can I just give that back to you and put the lid on? For like a little king. So you mind just popping that in my mouth? Thank you.
Here's something. When Rose is looking at her phone while I'm driving, I do resent it.
I don't mind that. What drives me mental, and I say to... TikTok full volume. She'll be watching TikTok full volume as I'm driving, and I'm just like, and I'm like driving along, and I hear no. And he's like, I did it, and it just jumps. It's madness because without the pictures, it's just mad songs.
Yeah,
and I was like, look, Lou, do you mind? She went, I'm looking at my phone, like, it's on loud. I'll be watching TikTok on loud.
This is another passive aggressive thing I do, Rob.
Go on.
If I see her just going through Instagram and I'm feeling jealous and I'm just sat there in silence, I'll go, should we have a conversation?
Oh.
Awful. What a twat.
Because you know, if it was the other way around, you'd be on your phone on it.
Of course, because it's boring.
Yeah.
Your driving's boring.
Also, I bet you sort of build up to it as well, just a bit like, I said, find your phone, are you? Just a little.
Yeah.
I was like, anything going on?
Any emails?
Any messages? Should we have a conversation? I hate it though. I feel like I failed when I say it like that. If you say something, then you go, oh, I shouldn't.
Because also the demand for, it's like when my parents, understandably, and I do it, you know, they'd go, should we turn the TV off and have a conversation? You
know? No, Dad. But actually, also, you're not as interesting as The Wire.
Well, The Wire wasn't around though, so I was saying you're not as interesting as Noel's House Party.
Who is?
Who is? Yeah, at the moment, a conversation is called for.
Yeah.
I mean, I realise that's what we're... But you just don't have anything to say.
Nah. Well, that, and you've called it on.
Yeah. Should we have a conversation? Yeah. Plymouth has started the season well.
Yeah, you can't have a conversation if you say, let's have a conversation.
No, it's game over. Awkward. It's game over. Do you think the panel show is dead?
I think it's a sleeping giant.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Right,
Mike Birbiglia.
Yes,
he's one of our cool American comedians we get on these days.
Yeah, no. So we've got a cool American guy from across the pond.
Across the bloody pond, eh?
He's very like,
and we don't mean the Thames. We don't mean South East London.
No, but he's one of them clever comics, isn't he? He sort of weaves it in.
He weaves it in, like you.
No, you're more like Birbiglia than me.
I was thinking this the other day. If I'm with you, I feel like I am basically the world's most alternative comedian.
Yeah.
And if I'm with Acaster, I feel like I'm the world's biggest hack. Which am I?
Neither.
Yeah.
Do you know what you
That's
are?
That's life.
You're nothing. I'm nothing. You're nothing. As soon as we label ourselves, the ego's in control.
Ooh.
Just be.
This is Mike Birbiglia.
By the way, I found your podcast through Jimmy Carr, who I'm only assuming you're maybe friends with him. I called him and I said, I'm coming to London and Edinburgh with my Old Man in the Pool show. What should I consider trying to be on? And he said that your podcast is the best podcast.
Oh, that's nice of him.
He would be right.
How do you know Jimmy? From back in the day on the circuit or from him going to America to make it?
Jimmy and I have known each other from doing the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal for about 15 years. As a matter of fact, in 2019 or 18, I won Comedian of the Year or whatever the thing is there, and he presented the award to me.
Oh, wow.
And it was very funny because, you know, Jimmy, of course, he burns you at every turn.
Yeah.
And so he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he goes, Mike is like a cross between Woody Allen and Bill Cosby, the worst parts. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like...
That sounds like Jimmy.
I did a Netflix special that was a Broadway show called The New One years ago. I think that's why he thought of this, because it was all about how The New One being the new baby and how I had a child, even though my whole life I swore I would never have a child.
Really?
So this Netflix special is called The New One. It's all about all the reasons why I'm never going to have a child, and then about how I had a child and why I was right, and then ultimately why I was wrong. And it becomes emotional at the end. And I owe a huge debt to Jimmy because I see him every few years in Montreal Festival, and he always gives me notes and thoughts, and he always has like 10 tags for jokes and things like that.
Yeah.
But with that one, particularly, he helped me kind of find the emotional center of it, which he's not known for.
No, I wouldn't say if you'd given me 100 guesses at who'd helped you find your emotional center, I'd have ever gone with Jimmy Carr.
That's why he hasn't found his. He's too busy finding other people's. He hasn't nailed his one down yet. I wasn't putting down as the emotions guy.
No, you'd never guess. And but he, you know, there's this part of the show. I don't want to spoil it, but it's at the ending of the show. But it's towards the ending of the show where I'm having like a real kind of dark night of the soul and struggling. It's my daughter was about 13 months old and I had the flu and I was on the road and it was like everything was so awful, you know. And I had this moment where I thought, again, the darkest moment where I just thought, I get why dads leave. I'm comfortable saying it because I'm not going to do it, but I get it.
Yeah.
And he kind of talked me through, if you watch on Netflix, you'll see like just the ins and outs of talking through that, because obviously it's a very fraught discussion point. Is
yeah, of course. That dominates your life, doesn't it? Yeah. If you've got kids or you haven't got kids, why haven't you? When are you having them? It's like you can't go to any family function without someone questioning you when you're about 25, 26. That's when it starts ramping up. And you say you've got one daughter. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, my daughter's 8 years old.
8 years old, yeah.
We're bringing her over to Edinburgh and then London. As a matter of fact, last June, I was doing an early version of the show that I'm touring with now, The Old Man in the Pool, at the Leicester Square Theatre. And we, my wife Jenny and I brought our daughter to Matilda, Tim Minchin's show.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, one of the greatest days of my life.
Really?
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it? Especially seeing it in London, I suppose, as well, Matilda. It's such a British thing.
Yes. I mean, this is where I have no jokes. It's just sentiment. It's like seeing your daughter experience that much joy for that much time in a row, you cannot put a price tag on. I mean, we did. It's $200 a ticket, but
good stuff.
it's a pricey ticket only for the wealthy. I mean, I'll try and think of a more relatable suggestion, but...
But if you want to be happy with your children, you need to be rich, basically, in the West London.
$200 a pop a day. That's what it is. Not including food.
No.
We're going to go again.
Yeah, you should.
I'm looking at your runs here. So you're doing August the 22nd to 27th in Edinburgh. Then you're doing September the 12th to October the 7th in London.
Josh, why are you patronizing me like this?
What?
We've just met.
Do you know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to... kind of get your tour tickets and dates out in a subtle way as if it's conversation. What are you going to be doing with your days when you're obviously playing the evenings in the Wyndham's Theatre from September the 12th? How many days? Do you get many nights off with that? Like, how does it work?
I do 8 shows a week for 4 weeks, September through October 7.
Yeah, you don't patronise me. I know that, mate.
And then my days are free, so if you guys needed a babysitter, I'm around.
Really? Okay, we could meet up.
My daughter's 8, and actually, as a matter of fact, she's going to be there for all of Edinburgh, and then she'll be there for one of the 4 weeks in London. Any suggestions you have for shows or anything to see? Well, again, we brought her to London last year, and she just loved it, like loved every second of it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, we'll send you some suggestions over. So
please.
What about her school, though? When is she back at school? Are you home?
She's back at school in September. Yeah, yeah.
So that's exactly when she goes back. What a fun summer, though.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was looking on your Instagram at the... Is it called The Pile? There's, like, a video you have your living room.
Yeah, that was a bad time in our life.
But it's so funny because that's... If you watch my special, the new one, it's just like that. There's a moment where I say, that morning... My wife gave birth to our daughter, Una, which means one, as in we're only having one. And then as I say it, there's toys that come down from the ceiling, like toys and clothing and car seats. And they all fall from the ceiling of the theater. And so I'm surrounded by just crap, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like that pile in your video on your Instagram, where it's like all of a sudden your life is inhabited by... It's no longer your apartment. It's no longer your flat, your house.
It's like Japanese knotweed.
How long did it take you to make peace with that? Like, as someone who didn't, in their head, was ever going to have kids, suddenly...
I think, like, next year.
About 9 years in, you sort of give in. You tap out.
When did you make your peace with it, Rob? Was it soon or was it...
I think it was a couple of years in where you basically go, look, I'm not going to be able to keep these relationships up with my friends. I'll just have no mates now and then wait it out until my kid can talk and then that'll be my friend.
Yeah, and I'm definitely having... 8 years old is the best, right? Like, it's just great.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
And I have this thing sometimes where I... One of my Achilles heels is that I... can't live in the present. And so my brain goes to when she's 16 and she's going to be like, my dad is garbage. You know what I mean? And when I was a kid in the 80s, no one listened to children. Like, we said that, but my dad would be like, is someone talking? You know what I mean? But now everyone listens to children. So she's going to be like, my dad is garbage. And I'm going to be like, she is so right. She's so brave and fierce. How can I amplify her voice?
Well, yeah, that is a totally different way of bringing them up now. And so how old were you when you decided you wanted kids then? And was there a moment that not to, you know, ruin if it's in the show.
But... my late 30s. Yeah, I'm 45 now and she's 8. So, yeah, it was around that time.
So what would the 28-year-old Mike Birbiglia be saying about kids?
Oh, my God. Like, literally my first joke that worked, you know, was in my early 20s. I said, I don't want to have kids until I'm sure that nothing else good can happen in my life. And it was one of those jokes where it wasn't even a joke. It was just something I said to my friend in conversation. They're like, you should do that as a joke. And I would do it. And it would, people would light up because young, you know, in your 20s, you're just like, no, yeah. I'm not doing this. Yeah. It's inconceivable. And then I don't know, I turned at a certain point when it was just something that was just really important to Jenny. And there's just a thing that happens where it's in a, I'm sure you deal with this on this podcast all the time, which is it's hard to not sound like a cliche when you say that there's a certain thing that happens when you have a child where your aperture opens and you just go, oh, there's this much stuff in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's my experience of it. And then you just go, it's inconceivable that you could ever not have a child.
I think it's almost like you spend so long, you're sort of so self-obsessed when you're younger. It's like you're just staring in the mirror the whole time. And it's like when the kids come along, they like literally pull you around and turn you around to face the other way. And you're like, oh, fucking hell. There's a lot going on here now. Yeah. When you're taking everything.
No, it's absolutely true.
What are you like as a parent? Are you, I'd see you not as a stern kind of disciplinarian, but someone who wants to have fun with the kid a lot.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think I definitely get charged with being the parent who gets the fun version of everything, but not the challenging part of everything. But yeah, I'm a fun parent. I play guitar, play music. I bring Una to the shows. She loves coming to the shows and being backstage and everything. Like, we did the show at Lincoln Center, which was kind of crazy. And then,
amazing.
Like, while the show was going on, Jen took her to the Nutcracker, which is at Lincoln Center. And it was just like, I mean, the truth is, like, Jenny is just the most amazing mother, and I try so hard to just be anything at all. Like, I have this joke in the new one where I say, and this is, of course, I wrote this when Una was like a year old, but I go, my wife and daughter love each other so much, and I'm there too. Being a dad is just being like this pudgy, milkless vice president of the family, just huge title, no power, also oversees Congress.
So you travel a lot at work. So does Jenny sort of take the sort of lead with the childcare then in that regard? Because you're away a lot, or you balance it so it's only over a couple of weeks?
I would say, like, I would describe it as I'm very, very present when I'm here. And when I'm not, I feel terrible. You know, I'm in Oklahoma and my wife and daughter are here. That honestly is one of the reticences I had when I was having a child in the first place, was always like, I perform in every city. Yo, sometimes I perform in 115 cities in a year. And some of them aren't even cities. They're just an Applebee's with a dream. You know what I mean? I've tried to curb that quite a bit. Like, I really, like, even with London, for example, it's like I'm going to Edinburgh for 10 days and I'm bringing the family.
Yeah, that'll be a fun family trip, though. There's loads for her to do there. That'll be fun. But Oklahoma for a Friday night.
Yes, exactly. Not as much
going on.
Come on,
everyone, get in the car.
So I've been trying to do that. Even like last year, I did Berkeley, California for a month. And I've just tried to have longer runs places where they can come and spend time.
Do you do a lot of FaceTiming and all that kind of thing? Or
a lot of FaceTiming, yeah.
So what's your rule on FaceTiming? Because I've got a specific rule when I'm away. And
what's
I was away in Australia
rule?
For
what's
like
your
5 weeks. My rule is I don't FaceTime them unless they ask to see me.
Oh.
And they can FaceTime me whenever they want, but like, I find if I just ring up and I can cut through basically whatever loose setup with the girls and the kids, and they might, ignorance is bliss, not be thinking of me and stuff like that, and it cuts through, and then I find it upsets what's happening at home, where if it's up to them, then they call me and then I speak to them. But like, I feel like if I ring home, it's quite selfish on my behalf because they're just getting on with it. But they can ring me at any time. But then I don't want them to feel like I'll never ring home.
I wonder if that's a younger kid thing. Like, I wonder if as your kids grow older, it's less that they'll be thrown by you FaceTiming.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Maybe it's something too strict with it. But I find when I do ring, they kick off a little bit because it's like, oh, dad. Yeah. And it gives them like more sway in an argument with Lou going, I want dad. Yeah. Where they don't actually want me. They just know that
it. Before you know it, you're having to hang up and you're thinking, I've caused absolute fucking carnage.
That's called fucking chaos.
I've absolutely destroyed it.
My recent crisis in parenting has to do with that when your child is 8, they're more like a person. Yeah. Like early on, it's like they're just like a animated bag of rice. And then at a certain point, they're like a talking person. You go, oh, I have to teach them something. And then you're like, oh, I don't know anything. I could do a 10-minute monologue. I could teach her how to do a 10-minute monologue about her life.
That's some great callbacks and really well-paced bits. Maybe some props that fall from the sky as you finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've had some questions. I go like, Dad, why is there the stars? Don't know. You're going to have to just read or find someone who knows, YouTube it. No, I don't know what this does.
The other one this winter was, I realized that I don't know how heating works. And I realized because over Christmas, the heat went off in our building and no one else was around. And I was like, oh, I don't even know how heating works.
Is that your show, the post-its behind you, Mike?
Yeah, this is, my podcast is called Working It Out. And I had folks like Jimmy Carr on and Aisling B and Nish Kumar and a handful of folks who you might know. And we work out jokes in real time. And so these are like cards behind me that each have the name of a joke. So
from the pod.
One of them says keeping up with the dead Joneses. One of them is called Death by Coconut. That's
what's Death by Coconut?
I read about a woman who died from a coconut falling on her head, which is the ultimate example of she did not see that one coming. But it's like, honestly, it's like a run of jokes about just all these different perverse ways where people die in these freakish accidents and ways. Because the show is all about death and life and mortality and all the ways in which basically it can all go in a moment. Honestly, The Old Man in the Pool is like 90 jokes about death that make people laugh and then hopefully feel something at the end. Like, that's the goal of the show.
Do you talk to your daughter about death? My daughter's 5 and we're entering that stage, so you must be quite heavily in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating because she read Harry Potter this week for the first time. And then we watched the first Harry Potter. And a year or two ago, we tried watching the first Harry Potter and it was too scary.
Right.
And now it's interesting, like darker, scarier things we find are easier and more palatable from books than they are from movies. Because they're a little bit more of conversation starters in the sense that I think movies can be kind of sensory overload.
Yeah.
And so I think like that's actually led into a lot of like conversations about, about death and the challenging stuff. I had a joke I wrote the other day about how Jenny said to me, she goes, at some point we're going to have to talk to Una about sex. And I go, I said, I thought maybe you and I could have sex with each other and then we could do a Q&A because I have a lot of questions. For the Working It Out show.
It's a good one.
Thanks.
I find that with the scary stuff that sometimes my daughter doesn't give a shit about death. So there'll be things where you think, she'll watch David Attenborough or something and she'll go, yeah, that's just an animal that eats another animal. That's fine. And you're like, I find that really upsetting myself. And then we try to read James and the Giant Peach. Have you read James and the Giant Peach? Roald Dahl.
Of course.
First page, James's parents are eaten by an escaped hippo.
Oh, my God. Fairy tales are very dark.
And I laughed, and my daughter's like, that's awful. Why is that funny? And I'm like, well, I can't really explain why it's funny that his parents are eaten by hippos. It's not funny. It's awful, isn't it? It's terrible.
It is a tricky... I mean, there's so many things with children where, first of all, I don't know when to bring up things. Like when Jen said we should consider talking to her about sex, I was like, when? You mean in 5 years? You know what I mean? Like I didn't, like I...
8 seems young about sex. What would you say? Like,
it doesn't though, because I feel like it also comes up at school in like 10 different ways. Yeah, you know what I mean? And so then it's like, well, who do you want her to find out from, you or some stranger or some other kid? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Because I found out what a 69er was at school when I was about 13, and that was really embarrassing.
Tell me what that is. I haven't heard.
Well, basically, the person had to draw it down, and it's basically it's when someone sucks someone off whilst they're getting sucked off or dealing with whatever else is down there.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So it's that's the numbers on the flight, like it's on the bed, and that got drawn out for me. And everyone laughed at me. But then I don't know if I would want my dad telling me about 69ers at the age of 8 either. So I'm not sure where, for me, the perfect age is.
I remember knowing that because I had older half-brother. I remember knowing about 69ers when I was 10 because I remember getting told off at primary school for explaining a 69er to another 10-year-old.
First of all, it's astonishing that in your parlance is 69er with an ER at the end.
69er. Yeah.
We do not have that. We do not have that.
What do you call it?
The number. It's just the number. It's the number on its own.
A 69.
That's correct. I've never heard it. It's only just now.
I've never asked for it. I've been asked for it that many times to get on top of the... But you know what I mean? It's not like I get it offered a lot.
I think this is my favorite parenting podcast.
Yeah.
This is where I understand the most about parenting from.
So do you not call it a 69er? Just 69? Am I the only one who does that wrong?
No, the ER. Now,
maybe
the
that's
ER
why
Lou
can
British
say
thing.
No. Maybe Lou doesn't know what I'm talking about. She's
that's
like,
right.
Well, we have a 99 in England, which is an ice cream with a flake in it.
I don't follow that at all.
So it's called a 99er.
It's not called a 99er.
What is it?
It's called a 99.
Oh, I'm getting it
it's
all wrong.
It's just an
here.
Ice cream.
Wait. It's an ice cream. From the ice cream van.
This is not a sexual innuendo. This is
no,
actual
no, this
ice
is
cream.
This is a straight up ice cream.
This is a straight up ice cream. So you know the Mr. Whip? Do you have Mr. Whippies? Ice cream?
No! I don't have Mr. Whippies ice cream!
God, I tell you what, if I gig in America, I've got a lot of explaining to do at every turn of my turn of phrase. So, is there, you know the ice creams where you pull the handle down, it's white and it comes out curly like that to a little point? Like a gelato, Italian style, but not scooped.
So, this is an odd turn for the conversation because we went from talking about a sexual position to talking about an ice cream.
Yeah, just the ice cream.
That's what the ice cream looks like. That's a very British seaside ice cream. Why is that funny?
I just think it's funny that you even have a photo of that. And I don't even know.
I Googled it. It's not in my camera roll.
Okay. So, and that's called a 99?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And 159 is you do a 69 and shove one of them up your arse.
Sorry. Oh. Mabel's pointing out that in America, it's called Mr. Softy.
Okay, now Mabel's made it even ruder. Okay. They're called Mr. Softies. Okay.
And here's a bit of trivia about it from the UK. One of the people that invented that type of ice cream was Margaret Thatcher.
Before she invented
she invented the Mr. Whippy.
Be true.
That's true. That's genuinely true. She was a chemist and she was part of the team that invented the Mr. Whippy.
Wait, let's get us back on track.
Go on.
So with the 69er, no, I'm just kidding. My question is, do you both live in London?
Yeah.
Josh does. I've just moved out to sort of like the edge of London. So it's sort of technically London, but not.
Shall I send you an invitation to opening night at the Wyndhams? Is that the kind of thing you enjoy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. We'll do that.
Can I ask you about sleep? I'm desperate to talk to you about sleep because normally we talk to people about their children's sleep problems, but you've got your own big sleep problem.
Yeah, I talked about this years ago. I did my first solo show in 2008. It was called Sleepwalk With Me. And I wrote a book that was loosely based on it. I wrote a feature film. This American Life story. And because I have a serious sleepwalking disorder that was undiagnosed called REM sleep behavior disorder that was since diagnosed, I jumped through a second story window of a La Quinta Inn in Walla Walla, Washington on tour.
There's so many words I don't understand, Mike, of this story so far.
Yeah. When I say... Walla Walla, Washington is a town.
Let me just go back to what the sleep thing is first. The REM.
Right. REM sleep behavior disorder, which is a sleepwalking, a very rare sleep disorder. It's just a random thing.
Right.
Where people have a dopamine deficiency, which is the chemical that's released from your brain into your body when you fall asleep that paralyzes your body so that you don't do what's in your brain while you're sleeping.
Okay.
So people who have this sometimes act out their dreams. Turns out I had a dream that there was a guided missile headed towards my motel room.
Oh, fucking.
And that there's these military personnel in the room with me. And I jump out of bed. This is 20 years ago. And I go, what's the plan? And they say, the missile coordinates are set on you. I decide in the dream, and then it turns out it was in my life, to jump out my window.
Oh,
so as to detonate outside the window for the sake of the platoon with me.
Oh, So I'm sorry. I'm laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of laughter when I tell the story. Yeah. It's absurd. It's just an outrageous thing. It's like one of those rare moments in your life where, in retrospect, you're like, "What the hell?" At the time, you're like,
"Do you vividly remember this dream? Like, is it a really?"
Yeah. So, it's funny. I actually just announced yesterday that I'm going back to Walla Walla, Washington, in January. Yeah. To do a show there, because I have not been back since. It's a very small town in Washington State, in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. So I jumped through the window, and it threw like the Incredible Hulk.
Oh my gosh!
And I say that because that's how I described it at the emergency room. I had to basically say, you know, the Incredible Hulk, how he jumps through windows and walls. That's like me. And I had to explain it three times: the receptionist, the nurse, the doctor. I'm the Hulk. I'm the Hulk. I'm the Hulk. And one of the guys goes, "No, you're Bruce Banner." And I was like, "Point taken, nerd." And so they put 33 stitches in my legs. And at one point, the doctor said, "You know, you should be dead." And I said, "No, you should." I zinged him because I'm a comedian. And then I flew back to New York, and I did what I should have done when I had had these sleepwalking incidents. I went to the hospital, and then I did what I should have done in the first place. I flew back to New York, and I went to a doctor who specializes in sleepwalking disorders. I was diagnosed with, again, rare thing called REM sleep behavior disorder. So now when I go to bed at night, I take medication.
Yep.
I sleep in a sleeping bag up to my neck, and I zip it up, and I wear mittens so I can't open the sleeping bag. And it's a true story. It's one of these things that I mention it in all my specials because it's one of those things you can't get around. You just go like, well.
And had anything happened before? Like, that was such a big event, like you jumped out the window. But had you had little mishaps like before that?
So I had, it started out years before when I started having this recurring dream that there was like a hovering insect-like jackal in my bedroom. And I would jump on the bed and I would say to my girlfriend at the time, "There's a jackal in the room." And then eventually she would say, "There's no jackal, go to bed." And I would say, "Okay." And I would go to bed knowing there was a jackal. And then one time it actually got worse. I had a dream that I was in the Olympics for some kind of arbitrary event like dust bustering. And they told me I got third place, and I stood up on the third place podium at the Olympics. And I move over to second place. They say, "Actually, we reconsidered. You got second place." I moved to the second place podium. I'm feeling good. I'm new to the sport. And they say, and then the podium is wobbling. And as it's wobbling, I realize I'm falling off the top of a bookshelf in our living room.
No.
I was living with my girlfriend, and I land on top of our DVR, like our TV recording device, and it breaks into pieces. And I wake up in the morning, and my girlfriend at the time said, Abby says, "Michael, what happened to the DVR?" And I said, "I got second place, and it's a long story." And at that time, I remember thinking, like, maybe I should see a doctor. And then I thought, maybe I'll eat dinner. And I just went with dinner for years until, honestly, I jumped through this second story window. Wow. And it was a very seminal life experience.
And so how did that affect when you have a kid and your sleep's completely messed up and stuff?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, that was actually one of the reasons why I never wanted a child. I always thought, like, well, I'm not going to be able to be up all the way through the night because I take medication, I'm in the sleeping bag and all this stuff. And it was definitely like, it was, I would say it was really, really challenging. And it was really challenging on Jenny, my wife. Like, and I, you know, I sympathize with her a lot that I was not able to do the things that most parents and dads are able to do in the, you know, that first year.
Yeah. Also as well, and it's not even because you like, "Oh, just get on with it" kind of thing. She'd be worried going, well, if it kicks off again and you've got the baby, it's dangerous, isn't it? Really? It's not
absolutely
just about like, oh, you do your turn. It's like, if you're left alone, and it's not fair on you or the baby.
No, absolutely.
And not on Jenny either, but it's safer if Jenny's there rather than you. That must have been terrifying. I'd be so worried about what I'd do.
No, unfortunately, I haven't had a sleepwalking incident in about 6 years. I'm trying to wean myself off the drug, you know, the medication
not
strong.
Grow out?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Because I wish I were not on this medication. I mean, I really desperately wish, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I have a bad case of the jumping out the windows. Like I have to take it.
Yeah. And is there any chance
like, is it a genetic or anything? Are you watching to make sure your daughter's sleeping all right and stuff, or do you not know?
I think we're hyper aware of her sleep, and I'm just hoping it's like an anomaly and this thing that is just a one-off thing. I honestly, it's one of those things where recently my doctor said to me, my sleep doctor, who's like one of the top people in this field, said, I don't even know if what you have is REM sleep behavior disorder, because it's such a new field of study, sleep medicine, things that these different diagnoses are changing all the time. And even the doctors don't know for sure what some of these things are.
I do think you have more exciting dreams when you're younger as well, though. Now I feel like
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Where like now I'm like, oh, it seems like a lot of effort to think of a missile, isn't it, when you're having a dream. My sort of dreams are like, oh, I sort of fell over last night and you shagged the bloke from next door. And you get up and go to work.
Yeah. I've had to take the medication, and so I never looked at the side effects until like a week ago. And I looked at the side effects and it was like depression, like poor motor skills and loss of memory. And I thought, oh, I just thought that was my personality. It's like that moment in your life where you realize that your personality is side effects.
So obviously you tour a lot. So in your bag, you have to put your sleeping bag and your mittens every time you travel.
Absolutely true. And not only that, I have to often explain at hotels why I need to stay on the first floor.
Oh, so you've always got a shit view wherever you go.
Yeah, it's so funny because a lot of times
that should be on the side effects.
We put you in the presidential suite, and I'm like, no, put me in the shittiest room to have.
Last thing you want is a presidential suite. That's going to be the main aim, isn't it, of any missile?
Yeah, exactly.
Are the mittens like what happens when you wake up in the morning? So you can get your mittens off awake, but you're not dexterous enough when you're asleep to take off your mittens.
Precisely that. So a lot of times, like one way to think about all this stuff, it's kind of a condom on top of a birth control pill. You know what I mean? Like it's like the mittens are in case the drugs don't work, and but it's all these different safeguards so that you don't get pregnant.
Yeah. Absolutely no chance of a 69er in those mittens, mate.
Oh, imagine that. Do you fancy it?
No, that's Mr. Softy all day.
Yeah. Mr. Softy in his sack, go to bed. Well, Josh, you sleep with the duvet over your head.
I sleep with the duvet over my head, but I just...
Well, that's just how you feel about your life.
He's got you worked out quick, Josh.
Absolutely hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, yeah, no, that is just how I feel. Is it not? I know I'm going into the wrong thing here, but are the mittens inside the sleeping bag? Or
yeah, that's the idea. The idea is that you're zipped up, and so if you have mittens on inside, you can't really unzip until you wake up properly in the morning, and then you take them off and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, God. So if you need a drink of water or anything, it's an absolute faff.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend having this serious disorder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you're criticizing him for having a lot of effort being like this.
I'm just interested. It's a good point, actually. Yeah.
I know what Josh is going to be writing on his Yelp review of this disorder.
Yeah. It's like, also, you do a show about disability as well on Channel 4. It's like, I know, a lot of hassle being in that wheelchair.
I know, but yeah, I'm just interested. I'm just interested in the way different people sleep. There we go. Yeah. It has brought us to the end of what I would describe as a broad conversation covering a variety of topics, many of them not parenting.
I've enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, I think it's been lovely and wide-ranging. Now, one of the topics I covered was that you are playing Edinburgh the 22nd to the 27th of August.
Oh, wow.
London the 12th to the 7th, 12th of September to the 7th of October. And then you're doing America. Oh, we've got American listeners. Portland, Walla Walla,
yes.
Seattle, Vancouver, Boston.
Yes.
Walla Walla does feel... So is that Walla Walla, that feels like the odd one out there. Is that just as a kind of, I've got to get this out of my system kind of situation?
Yeah, you can see in my Instagram tiles, there's that artwork in Walla Walla because I was staying at La Quinta Inn. And so we created artwork that says La Birbiglia Inn. And then it's all enshrouded in a broken glass window.
Amazing.
Oh, lovely.
I haven't been back since I jumped through the window. I'm actually very curious to see if I have PTSD from it.
Oh, God. Well, keep us posted. He might not be in the place. The Portland gig might not happen.
Are you staying in the place?
I'm not. No, I can't. I couldn't possibly. Although there is a plaque there next to the room.
Is there?
Yeah, there's a plaque that says 20 years ago, comedian Mike Birbiglia jumped through the second story of this room sleepwalking. And then it says, like, true story, Google it. And wow. Ira Glass made it. Yeah. Ira Glass, host of This American Life, made it and sent it there. And they have it up. And people send me photos and Instagram DM me all the time with it.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. But I have to say, there's two things I want to just say about the shows in Edinburgh and as well as London. It is all ages in the sense of like age. I mean, not kids, but like age 12 to 112. Like I really, I write these shows so that anyone really over 12 would enjoy it. And a lot of older folks really enjoy these shows. And I take a lot of pride in that. And then the other thing is that I've never been to Edinburgh. I'm very excited because people have always said,
amazing city.
They basically say, you write, what you're doing is an Edinburgh show. And I always say, I've heard that, but I've never even been there. And so if people want to know the type of show it is, it's a series of stories that add up to a single story and has a ton of jokes. And I think people will dig it.
And what's the one about you deciding to have a child that's on Netflix? Because I'm sure I listened to some.
Yeah, that one's called The New One.
The New One, yeah.
Mike Birbiglia, The New One. And it's... that one is very, 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 very kid-centric. And actually, Old Man in the Pool is too, in the sense that a lot of it has to do with mortality and recognizing my own mortality and realizing that, well, a lot of what I'm trying to live for is to raise my daughter.
Oh, lovely stuff.
Absolutely,
Mike,
beautiful.
One final question we ask everyone before we go. It's what's the one thing about the way Jenny parents, obviously we don't ask everyone this about Jenny specifically, it's about their own partner. But the one thing Jenny does as a parent that really frustrates you, but you don't really say it because it'll cause an argument. But if she were to listen, she'd pick up on it. And then also, what's the one thing she does that just amazes you and you feel lucky to be able to have a child with her?
Well, I said the other day, I said sometimes... I go, we're definitely both helicopter parents, which I'm guessing is a term that you use as well. Helicopter parenting.
Helicopter niner, we call it.
Helicopter niner.
Yeah, of course. Always an error at the end.
I think that often we think that we're helicopter parenting, but in fact, we're the entire Air Force. You know what I mean? Like we're on speed.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely the thing we grapple with. And then the thing that I'm in awe of is, pretty much everything. I mean, I think Jen's a poet. She's a wonderful poet. She writes under her pseudonym. It's Allen Ginsberg. And it's J. Hope Stein. And the book that we wrote a book called The New One, and it's stories by Mike Birbiglia and then poetry by J. Hope Stein about having a child. And she wrote this beautiful book about parenting called Little Astronaut. And I think the thing that I feel so lucky about is that Una has this wonderful role model who is just so true to herself. And I think that that's really important as a parent, that you're not pretending to be something else. I think that that's the kind of thing that children see through.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so
it's
much
been a joy
for coming
to
on.
You.
Well, I hope to see you there, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much,
thanks
mate.
Thanks so much, Mike. Mike Birbiglia, what a lovely bloke. What a lovely bloke.
I really liked it.
And we'll do a vote on our Instagram.
Yeah.
Is it 69 or is it a 69er?
I think it is a 69, but I always call it a 69er.
I think it's a childish thing because I call it a 69er, but that's because I think I spoke more about 69ers before I'd kissed a girl than in the rest of my life put together.
I thought
it was going to be a bigger part of my life.
I did a 69 once and I found it horrible.
Yeah, it's too much. It's
I didn't know
much.
What was going on, and he was big and he was airy. I'm better fun. Right, Josh, I'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.